Right, welcome to the latest edition of the Northern Affinity Podcast and our Teach Me How series. I'm absolutely delighted to say that I'm joined by Zoe today. So Zoe, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Well, you're very, very welcome, that's for certain. And what we're going to talk today about is, for businesses, how they can recruit more women and becoming an equitable organisation. And we, in a minute, we'll kind of talk about what we mean by those things as well. I think that's probably a good place to start. But before we do, do you want to tell us a little bit about you and what you do? And that might kind of make it all make a little bit of sense for the conversation as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So hi, everyone. My name is Zoe Hayden-Jones. I am the founder and director of a new company, Jobs for Women, kind of does what it says on the tin. We're twofold, really. We are a company that works with organizations that want to reach more women in their recruitment, be recognized as a leading diversity, equality, and inclusive employer. And then, of course, we work with our women. So we've got an amazing community of women that are ambitious, focused, always looking to develop and train themselves. And we nurture them in our free community. We've got a membership with on-demand content. We run live monthly sessions with coaches from all over the world. And we're all about equality for women. And we've also got a podcast. So lots happening.
Before we go on, tell us about the podcast. What you do on that? Because obviously, if someone listening to this, probably interested in podcasts.
Yeah. And we spoke, didn't we, off camera just then about like the joy of podcasting. And I think it's kind of taken on its own life, because I think the foundation of Jobs for Women is about women. We're talking about women's stories and what women are experiencing in the workplace. And the podcast has been a place for us to chat to real women going through real life situations. And it doesn't just focus on, you know, if you work in an office. So if you have your own business, it applies to you as well. We talk about women's health. We talk about things that women might be going through and just shared experiences. So it's a really conversational chat. It's a weekly podcast. We're just about to launch our bonus set, which is going to be a shorter 10-minute like career style extra. So if you're just on the go, you can just have a little snippet on careers advice. And what's really funny is, you know, you go through the process, don't you? Start your career and then you do your CV thing. And then you can kind of lose touch with, what do people do now? Especially if you've been in a role for ages or you've gone off to start your own business, you still need a lot of the skills, don't you? So the podcast is very conversational, but it's been a great way to reach more women. And when I speak to women that listen, they're like, oh, I love that episode when X, Y, and Z talked about this, because it's, we get pretty deep into it and people are not shy on sharing their experiences. It's not a place where we're just saying, poor me, this is what's happened. We have a debate about what needs to change. And then I use what comes out of those conversations in my marketing when I'm speaking to the organization. So it's kind of like using these tangible, real experiences that women are going through to make change. So yeah, anyone, welcome. Come and listen to the podcast.
And I'm sure they will. And I think that point kind of leads us perfectly into this discussion. I mentioned to you again before we started recording that this feels like a perfect type of conversation to have on this podcast. You know, the ethos and the theory behind it is the guests like yourselves come on and teach me about something I don't know about or I have little knowledge about. Now, whilst I am more than aware of issues relating to women in the workplace and such like, I will and have never experienced that directly. So I think this is a kind of conversation I really enjoy having, because I will learn more, I would imagine, than I do on many. So very first question, really easy. Why do we need to be having this conversation? Why do businesses like yours have to be there? Why do podcasts like yours have to be there? Why do we have to have things that are specifically aimed at women and not all of us?
Yeah, so women, as we know, have been sort of up against it in terms of equality, access to opportunities. So when we think about it, was just the anniversary, I think it was 50 years of women on the trading floor, for example. Women were not allowed, you know, to be traders, to step foot on the trading floor. So women have been suffering from injustice in terms of a work capacity and other areas, but we're here today to sort of focus on work. So we know that we've got a gender pay gap, and we know, which we might get into, that COVID worsened that for women. It went from like 14.9% to 15.4% because of COVID. So we were making very gradual changes to that. But there are so many reasons why my organisations need to exist, because we're not doing enough. We don't have enough women in leadership. We don't have enough opportunities for women. We're still having, you know, tribunals where women are not supported with their women's health. That's a whole other subject. And it's kind of like we just have to accept that change needs to happen. And although, yeah, we are making slow changes, we're definitely seeing more women in leadership. We're not making enough changes to have that profound impact. And when I'm talking about impact, the data tells us that women CEOs make organizations more money, they're more innovative, and they create a more diverse and inclusive workforce. So it's kind of like, hello, everyone. This is like a no-brainer. You want to earn more money? You need to get more women at the top. And it's not a case of pushing men out the way. It's not a case of giving them a job because of their gender. It's about opening up the opportunities and the talent pipeline. So this all stems back to equity. It's not a case of, we need more women in leadership, so I'm going to give that job to a woman so I can tick a box. It goes to the person that deserves the job based on their experiences, their interview. It has to be fair. But what we're seeing is that when companies are looking to recruit women into leadership roles, there isn't a pipeline of women because they haven't been given the opportunities historically. Or you, if you take tech, for example, women haven't looked up the career ladder. You know, when you envision yourself when you're younger, oh, could I do that job? And do I want to do something like that? And it's full of white middle-aged men at the top. It's not inspiring younger women to perhaps go into those careers, stay in those careers, which is another biggie, talking about retention, and sort of have that career trajectory. So there's loads of different elements that companies need to sort of wake up to. So I think until we see proper changes, organizations like mine need to be banging the drum and talking about it loud and clear. And also, like I said, it's a no-brainer. Come on, do you want to earn more money? Do you want to be more, have a diverse team and be innovative? Then let's get more women involved. It makes sense.
Yeah, it absolutely does make sense. And I was just thinking then, do you think that maybe like in modern times, now, that a lot of the issues are maybe unconscious biased as opposed to people purposefully doing things? And that's not excusing anything. That's not giving anyone a free pass. But that, I think if you understand, I guess, the root cause of the problem, it makes it more likely to be solved. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. It comes down to conscious and unconscious bias, but also society's norms. So what are we told? So I've just recorded a podcast with the commercial director at Lewis Football Club, the first football club to pay women and men exactly the same. And I keep going on about this. I'm so boring, but I loved sport at school and I couldn't play football. And now you've seen the rise of women's football. That is a societal problem. That is that we were told when I was little, I was told I can't be a footballer because at the very foundation, I wasn't permitted to play it. I was watching the boys play it and I could play hockey or netball. It's like, hang on a minute, why? So that societal, I was physically not able to do it, but then I'm told in my head. So then that might plant in someone's mind, and that can relate to absolutely anything, female scientists or, you know, women in tech, women in engineering. Well, women aren't engineers. Women can't be scientists. And then we don't see any role models. So it like perpetuates. And then you then take that notion, say you're in your mid-career, you might be a man, then that might be planted somewhere in your brain. And that's where the unconscious bias comes in. And that is huge. You can do training online. You can actually do a free training right now to know what your biases are. And it's interesting because we all have them. It's not a case of, I don't have any, like, look at me. We all have them. It's the way the brain stores the information. So this is a much bigger piece, but I think just the first point of being aware, like you've just brought that up, it's not just that you either are pro women or against women. There's loads of layers to it, even like how you're brought up. Say you've got siblings and, you know, there's a whole other conversation on men, you know, like how men are sort of society, you know, men don't cry and that sort of thing. It's like what we're told we can and can't do. And that is huge. And it's having these ripples and this impact, and undoing it is challenging. But that's why we have to be having these conversations that we're having. So people actually stop, pause and think, oh, wow, okay, yeah, I've never actually thought about it like that. I'm going to be more aware or more conscious. And also how you're raising your kids. If you're listening and you've got kids, how are you talking to your kids about things like this?
100%. And the thing with the unconscious bias element of it as well is those are the people who, like I said, maybe not doing anything purposefully, but probably do want to be fair and therefore are easier to make them fair, whether they mean to be or not. You're always going to get people, whatever we're talking about, whether we're talking about gender or race or religion, anything, you're always going to get a group of people who believe that they are better than somebody else, whether it's a man thinking they're better than a woman. The reality is they're going to be really hard to change their mind. However, I might be being naive here. I think they are in the minority and quite a small minority as well. I think most people will try and do the right thing. And if we can kind of change that thinking, it will go a hell of a lot of way to making this a better position anyway.
Yeah, 100%. And again, like what we talk about on, we run webinars, free webinars, like we do like women in tech and women in finance. And on the podcast, like I said, we have these anecdotes and these stories. And we talk a lot about this grassroots approach. So what you just talked about, it's like there are a minority that perhaps are stuck in their ways and will never change their views. But it's about calling out that behavior. That's what we can do at a grassroots approach. So if you work in an office or if you've got your own business and you employ someone and they, you know, make a misogynistic comment or an assumption about a woman, it could be anything, but you know, I'm here today to talk about gender. It's about calling it out, and sometimes it puts you in a difficult position. We ran a webinar, a women in property webinar, and we had a very senior lawyer, property lawyer on, and she said she was in this massive boardroom meeting, and a man made a comment, a sexist comment. And she was like, you know, she had that moment like, oh gosh, shall I say anything? And she did in that moment. She said, that's absolutely inappropriate. She said it was awful. And I was cringing and dying inside because to point out, you know, to this person in front of all these people, but that's the grassroots change. That's when you start to see the ripples. That's when that individual might think twice, will change the way they're thinking. But everyone in the boardroom calling out behavior, and that can relate to gender and race, sexuality. And I think that it's really important to be able to use your voice so that the minorities that are, you know, still going ahead, because let's face it, the people that do have the views that aren't open to changing it are often at the top of organizations. Maybe that's a general assumption that I've just made, but the problem infiltrates down. So it's like, if you have someone at the top that has this open way of thinking that wants to be inclusive and diverse, the knock-on effect is huge. But if you've got certain individuals at the top that are just not opening up that pipeline for women or for people we've just recorded a podcast on disability as well with my good friend, which was eye-opening for me. I just didn't appreciate the barriers. You know, you think you know, you don't know. Like it was incredible. So the more open we are of thinking, for those who are in businesses as well, it can change things. It can change things in so many incredible ways, open doorways for people, build relationships and partnerships. If only everyone would just get on board. But this is why you and I are having this conversation today.
Yeah, and I've got a question about what we can do. And I'm going to ask that right at the end, actually, of the conversation about what we can do to improve this. But obviously, the title of this conversation about an equitable organisation, do you want to kind of just explain to us what you mean by that? What does that mean in real terms? Because it's very easy to have this kind of phrase, isn't it? And what does that actually mean in real terms?
Yeah, so when we're thinking about an equitable organisation, it's an organisation that provides the same opportunities, the same resources, the same level of everything, regardless. So like fair treatment, regardless of your gender, your sexuality, your education level, you have the same opportunity and the same resources as every single other person. So it's not like if we're focusing on the gender thing, it's like, oh, we need more women, let's put more women through this sift on this interview process. It's about making it everything equal and understanding that everyone has different abilities, different physical needs when we were talking about disability. And it's about recognizing that and making sure that everything is fair and recognizing that we're all different and we all have different requirements. And I've got an example of that for, like, we've done quite a lot on the menopause and we've done some great podcasts. There was a woman called Paula Fry who was on the Davina McCall documentary and she was ace. She was talking about being a trader in her early career. What an inspiring woman, has absolutely smashed it, works at Bloomberg. And she was like, when she was going through the menopause symptoms, you know, like hot flushes and brain fog and thinking she had dementia and, you know, forgetting things and feeling like, she, you know, she's at the top of her game. And it's kind of like if someone's going through that and someone isn't, it's still having the understanding what they're going through and making sure that whatever is fair. So if she needs to work from home or have an extra aircon or something and you're in a meeting, but someone else is, it's kind of like knowing that people have different needs and it needs to be fair for all, which is kind of hard to do. But this, it's like companies need to sit up and take action now to be equitable.
Absolutely. And kind of picking the other part of this question about recruiting more women. And obviously we could talk very generally, but you've touched on a couple of things earlier as well about recruiting more women, I guess, firstly into senior positions within businesses and also into, should we say, non-traditional industries for women as well. What can businesses do? And again, we'll talk relatively generally to do that. Is it about the culture in the business? Is it about the language that they use? What type of things can they do to improve?
They can do so much to improve. So the data tells us that a woman will only apply for a job if she hits 90% of the criteria. And I, for one, have done that a million times over, looking at jobs. Men, 60%. So the first stage of the recruitment process is the what language are you using? We ran an Equitech event for women in tech, and Em Ledger, who works at the BBC, was saying, you know, on some ads, it's kind of like, what is desirable and what do you need? Just like, and you know, I need someone to be proficient in this software, and we can't train them. So she sort of posed the question of, really think about how you are excluding incredible talent right at the get-go with busy job ads with crazy expectations, knowing that women need to hit 90%. So you're just going to eradicate, like, in that first, very, very first section, you're just going to get rid of them. Great talent, amazing women, amazing people. So yeah, there's the job ad, making sure that you know what is absolutely necessary. So for those listening with their own business, it's like, if you're looking to recruit, really think about what can I train someone to do and what do I need them to bring into this organization? What is a non-negotiable? And then the interview stage, I was at a panel event at Leeds DigiFest, and there was a younger woman in tech who said she went to a panel and it was just older men. And she said she felt intimidated, and that intimidation led to her stumbling over her words and not being able to answer to the best of her ability. So again, thinking about the process, the interview process, being really transparent. You'll have one interview and then we'll get back to you within a week, second interview, third. This is the process. We need, regardless of gender now, everyone needs that process to be really smooth and clear. We're busy. We're also looking for jobs, cost of living crisis. If you want a new job, you need to know where you stand. Some of these processes go on for like 2 months and it's like, who, what? So there's that. It's like the process, the length of time. Who is on the panel? Are they diverse? Are they open to inclusivity? Have they got an open mind? Have they got unconscious bias? You know, if you've got a panel of men interviewing a young woman, have they thought about how that's going to make her feel? And the same applies to men. If it's a young man interviewing and it's all women, is it, have you got a good representation of the company? So I think the recruitment stage is huge. And I think companies are really missing out big time. And I think they can really, really shout about the organization. So if they are doing really cool stuff in there, so if they've got loads of support networks, loads of discussion groups, a mentor scheme, like shout about it in your marketing. Tell people that you want to work for them how good the organization is. So there's that, the recruitment is huge, but there's also the retention piece, which came up in our Women in Engineering webinar. I think the percentage is something like women that come out with an engineering degree, 40% are leaving the industry within the first few years. And I think that needs drilling down into it. It's like, hang on a minute. There's something going on with the work cultures in these places if they are leaving. Either it's lack of flexibility. We know that some women choose to have children. It's like, what's going on there? Is it a culture? This bro culture, which comes up. So I think culture is a big, hard, it's a bigger piece for companies. We know that, and change is huge. But I think companies need to be really looking at that. Like, yeah, you get a woman in, great. You tick a box in terms of, yeah, we're getting there. Are you keeping them? Are you supporting them? Have they got mentors? Can they develop? If it is a woman in a male-dominated industry, what is it like for her working in that organization?
Yeah, and I think it's interesting you mentioned culture there, because that when you were saying about that, people joining and then leaving, first thing that came to my head, well, that's obviously something wrong with the culture within that business, because for whatever reason, on the whole, women don't feel comfortable in those environments, which needs to change. And that kind of goes without saying. You kind of touched on women, obviously, and having children there. I think that, you know, I've seen this as well in businesses where a woman is, especially might come out of university, things like that, they're making their way up the career ladder. Then obviously women will then have their children, the ones that decide to have, I don't know, anywhere between mid-20s and 40, somewhere around that, kind of probably for most people and men is traditionally the period when your career is probably kind of the key period, really, isn't it? It's kind of where you're going to be often. Do you think anything's been done to improve that situation? So women that do go off on maternity leave and for 3, 6, 9 months, whatever it is, come back and they're not at the back of the queue again for the next promotion?
I think that we're making some headway into like shared parental leave, which I think is brilliant. Because I just want to say as well that Jobs for Women is not man bashing. We are not here to like elbow men out the way to get women to the top. So I think we have to work together on this. It has to be a collaborative piece. So I love that the shared parental leave. I know that when I had my kids, we were living in London then, and I had postnatal depression, and off my husband went back to work after 2 weeks, and I was like, this is what it was, you know, I couldn't do it. It was so hard. So I love this idea that men can take more time off. This is great. But when we're focusing specifically on the women piece, I spoke to a very large international, like global brand, who said that they had an issue with women returning. So actually going back and then quickly leaving, quickly dropping to part-time within months and then leaving entirely. And we know that this costs businesses loads. Recruitment retention is massive. So a lot of work needs to be done on that. And some women that we've spoken to in the community have just felt like they have literally, just as you've said, gone to the back of the queue. They've been forgotten about for promotion opportunities, no keeping in touch days, almost like just like, oh, they're not here, out of sight, out of mind. And this is a massive piece that I think organizations are just missing, because it's not hard, is it? It's just, you have a maternity policy, you've got a shared parental leave policy. What's your policy for embedding them back in to make sure that they're supported and that they stay in their role? Because it's just going to cost more money long term when they leave. So I think that they need to open their eyes to that. And yeah, like I said, in our community, some loads of women have left. For me, when I worked in London, I worked in like entertainment PR and film, because my background is marketing. And I used to look at the women at the top. I actually did have a senior woman in the top. I guess in media is more common. And she was just single in her 40s and used to say to us, don't have babies, get a dog, you know? And I was like, oh, right. Okay. You know, that is, that is absolutely unacceptable. And it was kind of like the baby thing wasn't even on the cards. A, she was telling me, which she shouldn't have, that I shouldn't have them and I should opt for a dog instead, but also it wasn't in the culture. I'm like, we're on this planet. If we choose to have a child, then that's okay. And I think there's this big taboo in certain industries where once you have a kid, you're kind of written off, off you go. And this is where the gender pay gap just widens, because the gender pay gap is obviously when we're looking at the top. So when you're earning the top salary in your career, that's when women are leaving because of menopause or they're the main caregivers, then it widens because we have more men at the top earning the biggest salaries. It's not so much at the bottom. So yeah, very, I mean, you can tell I'm probably getting a bit heated and I get a bit frustrated and wound up by it. But this is why I'm doing what I'm doing, because I feel so passionately about it.
And you know, I want to pick up on the point you made actually about it's not about pushing men out of the way. Because, and it's, I think anybody who thinks about this rationally will know that it's not, because I would imagine that the vast majority of anyone, and I'm including in this, people who listen or watch this, will have sisters, daughters, wives, mothers, etc. And it's a team effort, essentially, isn't it? And we all benefit from this. It's not, no one loses out. And I think sometimes, I don't know if it's the way it's portrayed, I think sometimes it is a men versus women. You know, I could go forever about the press and the way they word things. And I think that's often an issue when actually most men, because like I said, they have a wife, a daughter, whatever it is, who is female and therefore want the best for them. So it's just a team effort. So like, it's not us against them. And I think it's a really important distinction you made actually there.
Yeah, because this is what happens as well. At all of the events that I run and the events that I go to, the audience is 99% female, but we need men in the room to be part of the conversation because of what we've just, what you've just said. In order to make this change, it's a chat. It's not man bashing. It's not saying, oh, women, look at us, look what we're going through. It is like, let's get together and talk about it and make some positive changes. Yet every single event, when I went to Leeds DigiFest, I think there was one man in the audience and he worked at the company who was running the event. And I wanted to say, where are all the men? And I did another event and it was part of like an accelerator scheme. And I think it was like the mayor's, it was something. And he came up to me and he said, don't forget about the men, in this like little jokey way, and had to like, again, this grassroots approach. I was like, I know that's kind of a joke, but I said, look, this is not about just about women. Yeah, the title's jobs for women, but I'm not forgetting about the men. Men are part of it, because we can't do one without the other. You know, we're not going to eradicate men, we're not going to eradicate women. It's like, how can we come together and make it equitable for everybody?
Absolutely. And I think it's, yeah, having it as a men versus woman thing is almost doing down the issue, in my opinion. So, and it, you know, we see this in other where is alive. So yeah, I'm a big believer it's a team effort. And that kind of comes to me, my kind of the biggest question is, well, as a man, what can I do? And I'm talking as the all of us here to help this. And now, I'd love me as an individual to be able to change this. I can't, but if I do my little bit and everyone else does their little bit, it can't do any harm. Is kind of the worst case scenario, I think. So what can we do? What type of things can make a difference?
Great question. I think my main answer is just to be an ally, to be part of the conversation. So like we talked earlier about the grassroots approach. So if you experience misogyny or, you know, anything against women or anything, like we talked about race, sex, it's about calling out the behavior, calling out and saying, that is unacceptable. And to begin to understand the differences between, I'm not going to get into, I know there are lots of different genders now or the terms, but men and women are different. So when I talked earlier about women's health, that's huge. Women, we have a huge gender health gap as well. There isn't enough funding for women, yet women go through periods. Some women experience crazy periods, endometriosis and other symptoms. They might then choose to have children. There might be issues after that. And then, of course, there's menopause. So if you've got a man and a woman maybe leading two teams in an organization. It's about being an ally. So maybe having that understanding that women, we're engineered differently, you know, when we're thinking about biology. So it's like just that understanding, because I know that when we've done talks on menopause, it's kind of like there's that lack of understanding. I know that there was a woman, I did a TikTok on it actually, where she's just won a court case because her manager was like, oh, menopause symptoms again, off again, you know, that kind of thing. And it's like, if you want to get on board with this as a man, it's understanding what it's like to be maybe a woman leading and just being open to it, not having to like pander to them or anything like that. It's just having that understanding. It's like someone that is a different religion to you will have different days of the year that they celebrate, and just having that awareness so that we can all come together and work in tandem and in partnership and help each other out. So I think the allyship piece is massive. Come to the event, be part of the conversation, you know?
Do you think, I kind of a bit of a follow-up on that actually. So we're recording this in mid-October. I think it was a couple of weeks ago now, there was a scenario, an incident on GB News with the presenters whose names totally escaped me. I can't remember what they are, but anyway, made some horrendous comments about, I think she was a journalist, wasn't she, the lady they were talking about. Do you think I'm not saying they're not helpful, obviously, but I think what happened there was widespread condemnation from people, men and women, obviously, of those comments. Those comments, on the whole, would have, you know, let's say in the last 50 years, probably made in the pub or in the football ground or wherever it is. And by occasionally those coming out in a public domain, and then them very thankfully getting shouted down by the vast majority of people, maybe will help kind of people. Firstly, annoys people so they get behind this as an issue, but also it shows for the people, maybe like yourself, who's trying to do some good things, that there is a lot of people out there who will support. Does that make sense? I don't want to give them too much airtime.
No, absolutely. No, 100%. I think, was that the Lawrence Fox one when he made
that's the one. Yeah,
I can't remember. Yeah. But yeah, things like that. When, you know, a few years ago, a while ago, it might have just passed through, so to speak, because no one was talking up about it and it was just accepted. But this comes back to, again, the societal norms, the conscious and unconscious bias. So that was obviously nasty of him to do it. But is there something in his brain that he's got some unconscious bias against women? I don't know. But that the fact that there was condemnation and there was uproar about it shows that we're having the conversations. Can you imagine being a woman 100 years ago, 50, 60, 70 years ago? Like, I was speaking to my grandma the other day and she was like, oh yeah, when you got pregnant, you had to leave your job. It was like, what? And she was like, yeah, you left your job. It was kind of like, see ya, you're done now, and pretty much never go back. So yes, we've made massive changes. And I love it when I see things being like that in the media being called out. But I also get really, really mad that it's still happening. Like, I think there was Chris Hughes from Love Island interviewing a cricketer? And he said, he called her like a Barbie girl.
It was during the 100, the women's 100 cricketer.
And he asked her if she'd watched the Barbie girl. And he said, so like, you're a Barbie yourself or something, aren't you? And I was just like, oh my goodness, he's in his 20s and he thinks that that's acceptable. It blows my mind. And I know I am in this, living it and breathing it. But it still annoys me that it's happening on mainstream news. But like you said, the fact that it's being picked up, talked about, helps the cause, helps us have these conversations.
Yeah, and I do think, actually, funny you mentioned that circumstance, and you touched on it slightly earlier with the women and football. I think those things will help the situation as well, about high-profile people for young girls, especially, you know, the young girls are now looking up to with the women footballers or the women cricketers or whoever it might be. And whilst it'll take a while for that kind of to come through into the workplace and things like that, I think that might almost have a bit of a shift in attitudes from both male young boys and young girls, actually. You know, I know my little boy, 8 years old, he doesn't think girls can't play football. That's not a thing that's entered his mind.
Yeah, I love that.
And I'm sure that's the same for all 8-year-old boys, because they were watching the women during the Women's World Cup, and they've seen that. They see it's there, it's visible. And so they don't really see, they know they see the men on TV more than the women. Of course, they know that, but they don't think it's not a thing that women can do. And that can only be a positive.
Yeah, I love it. And this comes back to what we were saying earlier about the pipeline for organisations. If women aren't seeing women at the top, then how are they ever going to envisage themselves leading that organisation or another organisation? We need to have those role models. And it's so inspiring to see what's happening in women's sport. And again, alluding back to what I said earlier, when I wasn't allowed to play football, you can tell I've got a bee in my bonnet about that. But of course, then I'm looking at the TV and it's just men running around. So of course, I then accepted that as, okay, well, that's it. I'm not permitted to do it. So I think it's so refreshing that young children, like you say, I've got an 8-year-old as well, and he loves football, and it's completely equal. But we need to see that representation now in the organisations. We need to see organisations recognising that. And how are we going to inspire the next generation to become scientists and engineers and, you know, work in maths? There's a whole other conversation about maths as well. Like, when you drill into it, like, from a, as a society, it's kind of like that men are better at maths than women, and women don't do maths, which, I mean, there's loads of studies on it. And then it makes you wonder why there's not as many women in finance. So having that pipeline, having that visibility, having those role models is so important. And yeah, the Lionesses are just amazing. I love it.
100%. And I forgot, I was going to ask you a question earlier, so I'll ask it now as a last question, if you don't mind. You touched earlier about the pandemic, actually, and I'd be interested in a kind of just an overview of the effect of that and what do you, because I think there's obviously the actual pandemic itself was negative, that goes without saying, but I think most people accept that in all kind of facets of life, there's been some positives and some negatives that's come out of the pandemic. And I think of a particular positive around kind of generally workplace culture and understanding of work-life balance and things like that. But you mentioned earlier that actually it's had a negative effect on the gender pay gap. And I'd be interested to know a little bit more about that, actually, because I wasn't aware of that. So I'd be,
obviously, I agree with your point about, I think it taught us that we could go remote, which is brilliant, and that we can be more flexible, which is fantastic. Helps people with kids or not even with kids if they're the main caregivers. And also just work-life balance, you know, being able to, even if you're young and in your 20s or whatever, being able to have a day from home is massive, and you probably get more, you know, you're more productive often. So for women, because obviously the schools close, the nurseries close, so women traditionally already have the main caregiver roles. This is what the data tells us anyway. Women naturally pick up the slack, so to speak, in the house, the admin, the house duties, the caring responsibilities. And then obviously furlough happened, and initially it was more men that were furloughed. So we were at about 14.9%. And then in the second year, women started to drop to part-time, leave entirely, because they were more responsible for the children, elderly parents and that sort of thing, elderly relatives. So then it just widened the pay gap. So it's going to take us 100 years to be equal, which is very depressing. And I think it widened to about 120 years in COVID. So when you saw that increase up to 15.4% just in like a year or two, it's bleak. And if that's not telling us that, you know, if women are taking on the caregiving roles and all of that responsibility, then that assumption, again, when we're talking about bias, if you're if you're recruiting in your team and in your head, you have an unconscious bias that, oh, well, she's at that age, she's going to have kids, or she's got kids, or she's going to be wanting X, Y, and Z time off or whatever it is. If that's sitting in your head, then maybe you're going to employ a man. And that's what's happening. And that's what we need to stamp out. And that's why I think shared parental leave is so brilliant, because equally, we've got a whole other podcast that we could probably do on men, because I think it's really hard for men as well at the moment, because these shared parental leave policies are coming in. Yet a lot of men, because of what society tells us, that they go back to work and they're the main breadwinner, that they can't actually take it. And they fear now that they're going to be looked down on if they take it. And I think that's a whole other conversation that needs to be happening because of what I alluded to earlier when, you know, men don't show emotions and what, and you can hear it, can't you, happening, like, what, you're sharing the leave with your wife, you're going to take 6 months off, what? You can see those conversations already starting to happen. So it's important that we have these conversations to support men as well in the process so that then they can support their partners.
100%. And I've got about a million other questions, but I don't, I think we might have to do another podcast, I think. I see too many. And honestly, I think it's, I think the work you're doing is fantastic. And, you know, and like I said, anything men and I can do to support on that is we should do, and we hopefully many of us will do as well, because it's, yeah, it's such important. Because like I said, if nothing else, even if you look at it from a selfish point of view, most of us will have a wife, a sister, a daughter, whatever it may be, and think about those as well. So if that works as a motivation, then I'm fine for some people. If you're looking in the greater good, then also good stuff as well. Just finally for me, if people want to, you know, look into more about what you do, find out more about podcasts, et cetera, et cetera, do you want to tell us where to go? But I will put the notes in the show notes as well, but tell people where to go.
Yeah, so if you are a woman, I'd love you to come and join our free members club. So we've got on-demand content, coaching, it's all free. We've got yoga, mindfulness, meditation, it's all in there. And we've got a community group. So that's, I'll send the link, but it's just community.jobsforwomen.co.uk/join. And if you want to recruit more women or just connect your brand and your business as a leading business to our community, you can drop me an email or find me on LinkedIn. So I'll send you all of those links as well, Michael. And yeah, it's been a pleasure.
No, thank you very much. And I said, keep up the good work, and thanks for your time.
Thank you.